Can you figure out the ways of God in life? We know that He loves us. We know that He is in control. Yet we do not understand why He does some of the things that He does. And somehow we know that we're supposed to be learning from these things. But sometimes we just don't know what it is. You can kind of tell as you go through a life experience that something's going on here. I think God's teaching me something, but I don't know what it is yet. Sometimes years later we discover what that is. So let's turn now to the third chapter of the book of Ecclesiastes. And now look at verses 14 and 15. Why God does what He does. I know that whatever God does, it shall be forever. Nothing can be added to it. And nothing can be taken from it. God does it that men should fear before Him. That which is, has already been. And what is to be, has already been. And God requires an account of what is past. Who is God? If we understand who He is, then we know that there are certain things that are true about Him. Putting Him in strong contrast to what we have seen about man thus far in the book of Ecclesiastes. First, Solomon said, whatever God does lasts forever. You cannot say that about man. Second, no one can add to what God has done, whereas you can almost always add something to what a man has done or a woman has done. And third, no one can take away from what God has done. And again, I think in almost every case, you can take away from what man has done. Why then does God do such immovable, unchangeable, and unalterable things? What's going on here? Why is it that our works are so much different than God's? Well, Solomon said that God does it that we might fear before Him. We see our feeble works, that our works are rarely perfected. You can always add to them or take away from them, and even then if we do it perfectly, it doesn't last forever. But look at God's awesome works. You know, it really got me when I showed you that debate between Dan Barker and Brother Kyle Butt. How Dan Barker, the atheist, and then an atheist in the audience, when they asked questions, they mentioned a couple of things about creation. I wish I had noted them at the time. They said, you know, really, this is a poor design. They said that something in creation could have been done better. Well, I know one was the human eye. They said, that's really not a very good design. And I'm thinking, at the time I thought, you've got to be kidding me. And then the man who stood up in the audience to ask a question said somewhat the same thing, not about the human eye, but something else. And I thought to myself, you know what? In time, we're going to discover that whatever it is they think is imperfect is actually perfect, if we haven't already discovered that. And in time, they'll be silent. So we look at God's works and we look at our works, and that makes us fear God, standing in awe of Him, trembling at the awesome power of this God. What can He do? Mark chapter 4 shows that after Jesus stilled a storm on the Sea of Galilee, his disciples feared. Interestingly, they feared during the storm, and then he stills the storm, and they fear even more. And then they asked a question. And I think the same thing that happened there in Mark 4:41 is the same thing that's going on here in Ecclesiastes chapter 3. In Mark 4 and verse 41, Mark wrote this down for us. And they feared exceedingly and said to one another, "Who can this be, that even the wind and the sea obey him?" Do you see how they responded to the spoken word of Jesus? "Peace, be still." And the storm stops, and the waves stop. Would you not do the same thing? Would you not be filled with fear, thinking, "Who is this? Who is in the boat here with us? Who is God that we cannot add to His works or take away from them?" What happened in that boat is the same thing that's happening in Ecclesiastes 3. And hopefully this week, as you go home and think about what we're seeing here in Ecclesiastes 3, the same thing will be happening in your heart. Who is this who created all these things so perfectly for us to live here? As Solomon said before, so he said again, that which exists now has already existed in the past. And what will be in the future has already been in the past and is in the present. So how does God deal with all the things, all the works of man? Well, Solomon said that God requires an account of what men and women have done. Now, brethren, listen. These two verses, verses 14 and 15, take us right to the edge. They take us right to the edge, right up to the point that I've been talking about in my sermons on the first two chapters, though I didn't mention it directly this morning in the first 13 verses of Ecclesiastes 3. I've been telling you that there is something we do, and there is some great event yet to come that gives meaning and purpose to everything we do in life. And right here in chapter 3, verses 14 and 15, Solomon touched on both of those things. And he's going to dwell on them a little bit more as we go through chapter 3. And then he'll drop them for a while and bring them up later. Could you identify what those two things were? Well, either just keep reading Ecclesiastes or stick with me in these sermons and we'll see more what those things are. All right, verses 16 and 17. Everything has a judgment. "Moreover, I saw under the sun, in the place of judgment, wickedness was there. And in the place of righteousness, iniquity was there. I said in my heart, God shall judge the righteous and the wicked, for there is a time there for every purpose and for every work." What is it about man that man corrupts and reverses everything that God does or everything that God wants? If God says it's this way, man says, "No, no, 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 it's this way." If God says, "This is what I want," man says, "God, this is what you're going to get." If God says, "Go that way," man says, "No, I want to go that way." If God says, "Look this way," man says, "No, I'm going to look down there." We just seem to have a contrary spirit within us. And that's what's going on in these two verses. And a couple of centuries later, revealed in Isaiah chapter 5, The prophet showed that that same problem still existed, but this time he pronounced a woe upon it. Now here in Ecclesiastes, Solomon said, you know, God's going to judge, but then in Isaiah 5, he actually pronounced a woe upon it, saying this, "Woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who put darkness for light and light for darkness, who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter." We need, therefore, to be attuned to God's thinking, to God's way. Sometimes we just have to flat out divorce ourselves from ourselves and embrace God's thinking so that we won't do what both Solomon and Isaiah are talking about. Now, I want you to notice the way Solomon began verse 16. Brethren, this is so crucial. And in fact, it's crucial to understand this expression throughout the book of Ecclesiastes. If you forget what he says here in verse 16 in the very first line, and if you forget it elsewhere in the book of Ecclesiastes, you're going to end up believing some things or concluding certain things that aren't true. So it's very important that you note that. Notice that he said, this is how life looks under the sun. And sometimes you use the expression under heaven. This is how life looks under the sun. Looking at life under the sun, it seems that justice fails. However, remember what Solomon just said in verse 15. God will require an account. And look what he said in verse 17. God will judge the righteous and the wicked. So even when it appears that justice has not been carried out, Solomon assures us that it will be carried out. Sometimes it's carried out now in this life, but if it's not or doesn't appear to be now, you can rest assured that it will be later in the judgment. So, at the judgment, every purpose and every work will have its time. Every work of whatever sort it is, good or evil. Whatever purpose we've had in our hearts, good or evil, will have its time at the judgment. So God's going to do something about wickedness and iniquity. Let us then not despair about how life seems unfair or unjust sometimes. So even as there is a season for everything under heaven and a time for every purpose under the sun, there will be a season and a time for every wickedness and every iniquity. Well, where? Well, Solomon's telling us it's above the sun, before God at the judgment. Verses 18 through 21. Why God allows death. Now you heard the passage that Blade read earlier where Solomon addressed death before. He's going to address it again. Watch what he says this time. 18 through 21. I said in my heart, concerning the condition of the sons of men, God tests them. That, here's something we need to learn, that they may see that they themselves are like animals. For what happens to the sons of men also happens to animals. One thing befalls them. As one dies, so dies the other. Surely they all have one breath. Man has no advantage over animals, for all is vanity. All go to one place. All are from the dust, and all return to dust. Who knows the spirit of the sons of men, which goes upward, and the spirit of the animal, which goes down to the earth? Okay, so back in chapter 2, verses 12 to 16, when Solomon addressed death, he said there that the wise and the fool both alike die. Why does God allow that? Well, here in verse 18, he says that God tests the sons of men that they may learn that in many respects they're like animals. Even as both the wise and the fool die, so the sons of men and animals die. However, and you probably knew there was a however coming or something like that, even as the common death of the wise and of the fool make us think temporarily that they both end up the same, yet we've heard from Solomon that that is not the case because of the judgment. So the common end of the sons of men and of animals makes us think temporarily that they end up the same. Yet we heard Solomon say in verses 16 and 17 that man does not end at death. See, we appear to die as animals. Both of us made from the dust of the earth, both of us returning to the dust of the earth. But don't forget what he has just said. Our bodies die at the dust, or become dust, but not the spirit. It continues on. Therefore, looking at life from under the sun only makes us think that all is vanity because we end up just like the animals. Like the animals, we return to the dust because we were both made from the dust. From our vantage point under the sun, can you tell me what happens to either man or beast after death? Without the Bible, just close the Bible, let's put it away for a moment and not use any of its thoughts. Can I just look at life from under the sun as it exists on the earth and conclude that this happens to man after death or this happens to beast after death? Nothing on this earth makes us think that there's a spirit of man or a spirit of the beast and which direction each one goes. For that, we need communication from God. And that's where the scriptures come in. In other words, we need a communication from above the sun. Don't look at life strictly from under the sun. We need someone who's above and beyond the sun to say, here's how it is. So, how does Solomon then end this section? Really, the whole third chapter. And sorry I didn't advance that slide there as I should have. Okay, so now verse 22. Live life to the fullest. So I perceived that nothing is better than that a man should rejoice in his own works, for that is his heritage. For who can bring him to see what will happen after him? Again, life looks despairing. But he says, hang on. Because he's going to show that there's more to life than what we see on the earth under the sun. Therefore, he said, it is good to rejoice in your works. And we noted him saying that earlier today in verses 1 through 13. Your heritage, he said, is to enjoy life and to enjoy what you do. Make the most of everything. Make the most of every opportunity. And then he asks, you know, who can bring a man to see what will happen after him? See, this is where he's trying to get us to think. I mean, you know how to answer the question, though he didn't answer it himself right there. See, again, I know that there's more than just the dust here. So I know man cannot do it. Man cannot bring me to see what will happen after I die. Man just does not have that capability. Now, you know, they're talking about it all the time. They try and prove by science that there's life after death, and you know, and there's mediums, and all these people claim they talk to the dead and so on. But all those things fail. The only one who can show us what will happen afterwards is God. God is the one who can bring us. God knows who our successors will be. Remember, Solomon worried about that in chapter 2. You know, when I die and leave all this stuff behind, what will the man who's coming after me, what will he do with all that I've set up? But God knows that. And God knows what will happen to us after death. So, if that is true, does it not make sense then to place your life in His hands and to be aware of two things? Number one, of His existence and of the judgment. There is a God, and every single one of us one day will meet Him face to face. The time is coming. So I want to ask you, you know, are you ready to do something about it? And are you ready now? You know, why wait? What is it that sometimes we wait for? I know I waited. I waited probably a couple of months after I'd already made the decision I want to become a Christian. It took an elder in the church saying to me, "Don, are you ready to do something about it now?" And I said, yes. So I'm asking you, are you ready to do something about it now? Or if you're already a Christian and you've not been fulfilling your purpose or God's intent for you on this earth, are you ready to do something about that now? Are you ready to recommit your life to the Lord Jesus Christ? If so, and you want us to help you either with that or to become a Christian, come forward now as we stand and sing.